How many of you know who John Scalinas is? Okay. Not many. No one. Unless you're a baseball fan, you may not know the name. 4,000 people and coaches came from all over the world to hear him speak at a convention in Nashville, Tennessee. There were other speakers, but his was greatly anticipated. From the article that was written by Chris Sperry, a baseball consultant who was there in the audience in 1996, in his own words, I'm going to read. I found the clinic schedule in my bag. 1 p.m., John Scalinas, Cal Poly Pomona, which is a college in California. It was the man whose name I had heard buzzing around the lobby 2 days earlier. Could he be the reason that all 4,000 of these coaches had returned early to the convention center? Wow, I thought, this guy must really be good. I had no idea. In 1996, Coach Scalinas was 78 years old, 5 years retired from college coaching career. That began in 1948. He shuffled to the stage to an impressive standing ovation, wearing dark polyester pants, a light blue shirt, and a string around his neck from which hung home plate. He had this with a string as he walked up there. Home plate. After speaking for about 25 minutes, John Scalinas said this, "The reason I stand before you today is to share with you baseball people what I've learned in my life, what I've learned from home plate in my 78 years. Several hands went up when John Scalinas asked how many Little League coaches were in the room. And he asked them, do you know how wide home plate is in Little League? Do any of you know? After a pause, someone offered 17 inches, more of a question than an answer. That's right, he said. How about Babe Ruth? Any Babe Ruth coaches in the house? Another long pause, 17 inches, came a guess from another reluctant coach. That's right, said Scalinas. Now, how many high school coaches do we have in the room? Hundreds of hands shot up then as the pattern began to appear. How wide is home plate in high school baseball? 17 inches, they said, sounding more confident. You're right, he said. And you college coaches, how wide is home plate in college? 17 inches, he said. They all said in unison. Now they're really feeling confident about this. Any minor league coaches here? How wide is the plate in pro ball? 17 inches. Right. And in the major leagues, how wide is it? It's 17 inches. 17 inches, he confirmed, his voice bellowing off the walls. And what do they do with a big league pitcher who can't throw the ball over 17 inches? There was a pause. They sent him to Pocatello. I didn't know where Pocatello was, but I looked it up. It's a small town in Idaho. He hollered, drawing a lot of laughter. What they don't do is this. They don't say, ah, that's okay, Jimmy. You can't hit 17-inch target. We'll make it 18 inches or 19 inches. Oh, we'll make it 20 inches so you have a better chance of hitting it. And if you can't hit that, let us know so we can make it wider still. Say 25 inches. He paused and he said, coaches, what do you do when our best players show up late to practice? When our team rules forbid facial hair and a guy shows up unshaven? What if he gets caught drinking? do we hold him accountable? Or do we change the rules to fit him? Do we widen home plate? The chuckles gradually faded as 4,000 coaches grew quiet. The fog lifted as the old coach's message began to unfold. He turned the plate toward himself, and using a Sharpie, he began to draw something on that plate. And we turned it around to the crowd with the point up. A house was revealed, complete with a freshly drawn door and two windows. This is the problem, he said, in our homes today, with our marriages and with the way we parent our kids. With our discipline, we don't teach accountability to our kids, and there are no consequences for failing to meet the standards. We widen the plate. Then to the point at the top of the house, he added a small American flag. This is the problem in our schools today. The quality of our education is going downhill fast, and teachers have been stripped of the tools they need to be successful and to educate and discipline our young people. We're allowing others to widen home plate. Where is that getting us? He replaced the flag at the top of the plate with a cross. And this is what he said in his words. And this is the problem in the church, where powerful people in positions of authority have taken advantage of young children, only to have such atrocities swept under the rug for years. Our church leaders are widening home plate. He goes on, the baseball consultant. I was amazed at a baseball convention where I expected to learn something about curveballs and bunting and how to run better practices. I had learned something far more valuable from an old man with home plate strung around his neck. I had learned something about life, about myself, about my own weaknesses, and about my responsibilities as a leader. I had to hold myself and others accountable to what which I knew to be right. Lest our families, our faith, and our society continue down an undesirable path. If I am lucky, Coach Scalinas concluded, you will remember one thing from this old coach today. It is this: if we fail to hold ourselves to a higher standard, a standard of which we know to be right, if we fail to hold our spouses and our children to the same standards, if we are unwilling or unable to provide consequences when they do not meet the standards, or if our schools and churches and our government fail to hold themselves accountable to those they serve, there is but one thing to look forward to. With that, he held home plate, turned it backwards to reveal this. Dark days ahead, he said. Dark days ahead. Coach Scalinas died in 2009 at the age of 91, but not before touching the lives of thousands of people, young people. His message was clear. Coaches, keep your players, no matter how good they are, your own children, and most of all, keep yourself at 17 inches. Well, brethren, we live in a world today that no longer wants to live within the 17 inches. That 17 inches is right here. Right here it is. This is home plate. 17 inches. Yet we find so many are trying to do away with home plate altogether. They want to change the rule book. Just look at what society has done to our standards in the last 3 or 4 decades. It's appalling to me. I can't believe what has happened. It is becoming harder and harder to even comprehend how wide home plate has been widened. From moral issues to our Christian values and foundations, which our society was founded on, the Ten Commandments in public places can't be tolerated anymore. The pursuit of some to remove God from everything, prayer in our schools and at sports events, receiving a great deal of criticism for doing this. But more importantly is the mocking and the ridicule and the absurdity of those who would try and live their lives within that 17 inches. My question to you today is, how can we live within that 17 inches? As time marches on, we will be faced with more pressure to widen home plate, to be more accommodating towards sin in our society as Christians. We are already receiving backlash, you hear it in the news all the time, for people standing up for the standards which we have known most of our lives within that 17 inches. And you know, it's prophesied to get worse as time goes on. If you take and turn over to 2 Peter 3:4, where it talks about scoffers. 2 Peter 3:4, and it says, knowing this first, that scoffers will come. In past history, they were there. But it says, in the last days, walking according to their own lust, saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. But there are those scoffers. Well, what does the Bible say about scoffers? Well, the word scoffer in the English is translated one who mocks, one who ridicules or scorns the belief of another. In Hebrew, the word translated scoffer or mocker can also mean an ambassador. It seemed a little strange, but it says, so a scoffer, it goes on to define it, is one who not only disagrees with an idea, but he also considers himself an ambassador for the opposing idea. He cannot rest until he has demonstrated the foolishness of any idea that is not his own. A scoffer voices his disagreement, ridicules all who would stand against him, and actively recruits others to join his side. In the Bible, scoffers are those who choose to disbelieve God and his word. They say in their hearts, there is no God. We find in Psalms 14:1, where it says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable things. There is none that doeth good. The same people in our society make it their ambition to ridicule those who follow God. Mockers. Today we're going to look at the three big C's. They're not the only definition here, but the three big C's that can help us as Christians stay within those 17 inches. And those three C's are compromise, complacency, and conviction. The first of the three C's is compromise, and some of these we're going to attain to, and to others we must refrain from. As I said, the first of the C's is compromise. Compromise in one's principles is defined as to forsake, to ignore, or otherwise go against one's fundamental beliefs or values. Our standard as Christians always need to be, is it biblical? Not your personal opinions of, I see it this way, or do biblical teachings really work in our society today? Scripture is clear. Any compromise with the world, whether in doctrine, morals, or relationships, will have ultimately disastrous consequences. We find biblical characters who were faithful to begin with, who God was working with, but then they compromised and they became unfaithful later in their lives. These accounts are in the Bible to bring home to us the dangers that we ourselves can get caught in. There is the account of King Uzziah, 2 Chronicles 26. You can just write that down. But he began his reign age 16 years of old, of age, and was faithful for many years. But then he decided to widen the plate. He became proud, and as a result of his fame and success, he became arrogant and he became disobedient. He usurped the position of the priest and presumed to enter the temple to offer a sacrifice himself. That's how proud he thought he was, which he was not authorized to do. King Uzziah, after doing this, was struck down with leprosy until the day of his death because he compromised with God's law. Then we all know the sad example of King Saul in 1 Samuel 28, who began well and with great promise, but he ended up a hot-tempered, self-pitying, paranoid man. He even consulted the witch of Endor rather than to seek God's guidance. You know, Saul did all that despite the fact that when he began, he was the best man that God could find in all of Israel for that position. This ought to be a sober warning for all of us. If even he could degenerate so badly, then so can we, if we allow ourselves to drift and compromise with sin. Then there's King Solomon. He began very well indeed too. Had more wisdom than any other man on the earth. But he went astray. He compromised due to the marrying of so many wives, many of whom were not Israelites, who worshipped idols. We know his story. 2 Kings 5, we find the story, which this one is always an interesting story to me, Gehazi, the servant of Elijah, the man of God. It says he's a man of God. He was the assistant to the prophet Elisha. He served Elijah for years. Years. And then he compromised and he fell into sin and unfaithfulness when he was tempted by the desire for money. He lied to Nahum, the Syrian, and extracted a financial gift from him, pretending that Elisha had asked for it. And Elisha refused it, adamantly refused it. As a result of that deception, God struck as Gehazi down with leprosy also. He compromised in what he knew was right. He started out as a man of God. Then there's King Rehoboam, the son of King Solomon. Consider the advantage he had is having a father like that, even though Solomon went astray. Yet we are told that when Rehoboam became established as king, he abandoned the law of the Lord and ended up doing evil. He started out good. Compromise came in. In 2 Corinthians 12:1, This is what is said. When the rule of Rehoboam was established and he was strong, he abandoned. So he was keeping God's law. And he abandoned the law of the Lord and all of Israel with him. A little further down, 2 Chronicles 12:14 says, and he did evil, for he did not set his heart to seek the Lord, which is where he started. These all compromised with God's laws. But we're all familiar with those who would not compromise. Their example is something we need to really look to. We all know, we repeated it over and over, the examples of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Figures in Daniel 3, which we read about. The three Hebrew men who were thrown into the fiery furnace by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, when they refused to bow down to the king's image, they would not. It was set in their hearts. There was no compromise. Daniel in the lion's den in Daniel 6, he stood firm and absolute, no compromise. Great examples to look for encouragement. Well, the next C we want to look at is complacency. Complacency is defined as a feeling of contentment. You're satisfied. And self-satisfaction that prevents you from trying harder, from growing. Often it's combined with a lack of awareness of pending trouble or controversies. The Bible does talk about complacency. In Revelation 3:17, we read, because you say, I am rich, and I am creased with goods, and I have need of nothing, and don't know that you are wretched, miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. Complacent attitude, because you're comfortable where you're at. Matthew 24, verse 42. It says, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house hadn't been complacent, he would have known what hour the thief would come. He would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. You can't be complacent. Over in Luke 12:19, we again find a pretty good example of complacency. And it says, I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. Wow, is that a complacent heart right there? But then we have a warning, a big warning. And we find that over in Revelation 3:15. And I know we're all familiar with it. It's talking about the Laodiceans, but it says, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm, because you are complacent, you're satisfied, and you're neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. And you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. We definitely don't want to fall into that category. Romans 13 and verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11. And it says, and do this, understanding the present time, where we're living right now, I think, in the last days. The hour has already come for you to wake up your complacency from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave decently and as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, nor in sexual immorality or debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ, and do not think about how to glorify the desires of the flesh. The third C is conviction. Now, this is the opposite of the other two. Conviction is defined as a belief that is God ordered. That is a conviction. You follow through on it. It is not merely a matter of resolve or dedication, but is a matter of believing with all of our heart that God requires it of us, with all of our heart. Our conviction is essential into faithful living, our character building, loyalty, integrity, and most of all, faithfulness to God. Whether we compromise and sin is directly tied to the strength of our convictions. If we relent under pressure from, say, your family or family members, or we're threatened with a loss of a job because of the Sabbath or the holy days, perhaps threatened with going to jail in the future for your beliefs, you are not convicted, but are exercising your preferences, which can change when pressure is applied. Your conviction must be steadfast and unshakable. You know, there's a reading on the internet, and there's a lesson that I think we can all learn from the buffalo. I didn't know this. It says, in storms out west, where the buffalo roam, in storms of the winter, when you get 50 and 60 mile an hour winds, and you got snow several feet deep, cattle will turn tail to the storm, and they will drift with the wind until they pile up in corners, trampling each other to death. In contrast, the buffalo faces into the storm. And I know we've all probably seen the pictures of a buffalo covered in snow and ice as they hold fast until the storm passes. They stand firm there until the storm is gone. As soon as the storms come in life, we too can turn tail and drift with whatever political, moral, or social issue that's presented out there in society, pushing us, or we can stand firm on our convictions. It's not always going to be easy. We often think that the strength of conviction comes to the forefront only when everything is on the line. Perhaps even when our eternal salvation is on the line. But in thinking like this, we make a serious mistake. Strength of conviction in the day-by-day things is the very exercise that determines whether we have the convictions necessary when everything may truly be on the line. Let me repeat that. Strength of conviction And the day-by-day things is the very exercise that determines whether we have the convictions necessary when everything truly may be on the line. If we desire to have convictions that will stand the test of what is coming ahead, or what we may be experiencing now, we must exercise our senses daily by yielding to God and coming to know Him in the arena of life. Then we can be deeply convicted about what He expects and what our choice should be to please and glorify God. You know, the 17 inches that I spoke about, that's 17 inches right there, across there, must be something that we are truly convicted of, staying within. Many out there are desperately trying to widen home plate. We see it every day. We can look at the change in society and morals in the last 50 years. I recently read an article of a megachurch pastor. When I say megachurch, they had thousands of people in their congregations. And he said, Christians aren't required to keep the Ten Commandments. His intent is to widen home plate from 17 inches to 5 feet. Another megachurch pastor recently stated that the first century apostles are all wrong and outdated. And he has come out boldly, like he's got new truth, to imply that the apostles, Paul, Peter, and John, who wrote much of the New Testament, were wrong and they need to be corrected and rebuked. Another case of widening home plate. You know, the more these ideas are presented to society, the more they become accepted. I'm going to read from the author. Her name is Joni Tada. Some of you may be familiar with her. She says this, and see if this doesn't sound like what has happened to our society today. She says, and gradually, though no one remembers exactly how it happened, the unthinkable becomes tolerable. And then it's acceptable. And then it's legal. And then it's applaudable. Kind of amazing when you think about some of the things, I won't go into them, but I could mention them, that are applaudable today that were considered horrible 50 years ago. These words sound so familiar to events and things that are happening around us today. We as God's people must live within the true words of what God inspired within the Holy Bible. I want to conclude with a very short scripture, yet it's very powerful. And it's John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. All of them. Not six of them, or five of them, or the ones you like and the ones you don't. Keep my commandments. Men may try to change a home plate, but God has not changed the roll book. Home plate is still 17 inches, and it will always be 17 inches. Remember the three C's. Don't compromise. Don't be guilty of complacency. And have conviction. Brethren, stay within the 17 inches.
Thank you.